The world's gender variant peoples are on the brink of a new era of consciousness and personal growth as they look beyond their own cultures and discover that they are part of something much bigger. Where will that lead us? And what does it mean for us as individuals, as campaign groups, and as part of the big picture of humanity? Most trans people over the age of about 30 can probably identify a moment in their personal development when they wondered whether they were the only person to have ever felt the way that they did. In the days when there was very little media coverage of trans and intersex issues, and long before the internet transformed the exchange of minority knowledge, it was quite possible to grow up without ever having heard about people who challenged the myth of strictly binary gender. The realization that we are not unique or alone is a big moment, though for many in the past, it has not always been a positive one. My own moment of discovery arrived during childhood, but it arrived in the form of very negative media reporting of a transsexual person at that time in mid-60s Britain. In the space of reading one newspaper article at 11 years of age, I was set free from the fear of being a unique sort of freak who instinctively knew not to communicate my experience to anyone. In place of that fear, however, I learned that transsexual was definitely not a positive thing to be either. The newspaper taught the lie that people like the subject of their article was something extremely rare and something extremely freakish. My only advance on that memorable Sunday morning, therefore, had been to progress from the uncertain suspicion of being a unique freak into the certain horror of being a rare freak instead. All the newspaper had done was to confirm what I had instinctively guessed from years previously as a child. It drove the fear of myself even deeper. What I experienced that day is a problem that is common for all minorities in learning about themselves from the dominant culture which keeps them in their place. Gender variant people share this political problem with every other minority and outcast group on the planet and from throughout history. It's a double-edged evil. It teaches society to fear and loathe the minority group. It also teaches members of the minority group to fear and loathe what they are. Whatever the difference is, skin colour, religion, sex, disability, family or ethnic status, the thing which the dominant culture labels and demeans as inferior, diseased or perverted becomes the thing that which we are effectively taught to loathe about ourselves. We reason that if we were not black, Muslim, female, wheelchair bound, lower class or immigrant, or if we could conceal these things, we would have a chance of joining the majority part of society which calls the shots. The challenge faced by all minorities pulling themselves out of this ghetto existence is to discover and communicate the real truth of their experience. They need to bypass the dominant culture's propaganda, discovering and documenting the reality in its place. What you can learn depends on how far you're able to see. One of the most significant moments in my own life came from meeting trans people from other Western countries. For decades, those opportunities to meet and compare notes were rare and difficult to arrange. It used to be difficult enough to find trans people in your own town or country. How on earth do you start in a strange land? We often found we had the missing parts of each other's jigsaws, though. How common are transsexual people? Were we a product of late 20th century Western culture? Did trans people exist elsewhere? Did trans people exist back in history? Was society's reaction to trans people always the same? Did these factors differ between cultures, or were there some factors which were more constant? The widespread adoption of the internet has been the single largest influence in the growth and emancipation of trans people over the last decade and a half, nationally and globally. On a national level, trans people quickly learned to use the internet to spread the kind of transformative knowledge which I've already mentioned. A pre-teenage trans child nowadays doesn't need to rely on the distortion of the mainstream media to learn that there are other people like themselves, and that those people can be happy, successful, and emotionally strong. People who might be one of only a handful in their town or region have been able to link up with others the length and breadth of their land. National campaign and support organisations have been able to provide information in a volume which small budgets had previously prevented. Today, in many countries, it's difficult to imagine trans people having a fraction of the sense of community and emancipating knowledge about themselves without electronic publishing through the web and communication via email. Just as campaigners and support organisations have found the internet to be invaluable in reaching inwards to their own national communities to offer knowledge, new friendships, and organise trans folks as a campaigning force, national trans leaders have also grown increasingly aware of the context of the world around them too. The last 4 to 5 years have seen a new surge in the way that trans campaigners have begun to think beyond their own borders. It is an expansion of thought and consciousness that is taking place at many levels too. The initial motivation for linking up has often been a self-serving one. In fighting national campaigns for greater inclusion of trans people in society, campaign leaders have had a natural and understandable thirst for knowledge about what happens in the rest of the world. The question of whether gender variance is universal is vital in being able to establish that trans people are not merely a cultural or passing contemporary phenomenon. Collaboration around the world has added immense weight to the evidence that trans people exist in every human culture, and that we have done so throughout history too. That kind of knowledge is what helps transform our experience from conceptualization as an illness or cultural degeneracy into being understood as just a natural variation of being human. Political and legal decisions are not limited to national perspectives either. In Britain, for instance, the ability to obtain and interpret news of trans court decisions from around the world has been invaluable. In turn, we wanted the world's trans people to be able to understand and benefit from our own advances too. The speed of change is largely determined by how quickly people can seize one success and transform it into another. Our enemies are also global scale organisers too, whether working behind the doors of world religions or in the growing networks of politically reactionary opponents of social change. Working together isn't a luxury, but an essential in the face of such threats. We have to get better and better at exchanging intelligence on their narrow-minded attempts to stigmatise and marginalise us, because they are getting more and more determined to keep us in our place. The places they will pick for their dirty tricks will often be the countries where trans people appear most isolated and vulnerable. The more that trans people in some countries have learned about and benefited from others, each other's contributions, the more we've become fascinated by the dark areas on the trans map of the world. English-speaking activists, those of us in the United States, Europe and Australasia, have become increasingly intrigued by what is going on in the countries where we don't have regular contact or much knowledge of the political scene. Research carried out 6 years ago for British campaigners indicated, for instance, that practically every country in the Council of Europe had some sort of system for legally recognising trans people, permitting document changes and marriage. Only 4 out of 39 countries, Albania, Andorra, Ireland and the UK had no system at the time, and that knowledge, of course, helped Britain into becoming one of the latest nations to join the majority. Yet what about all those other countries? Did trans people in France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Portugal, the Scandinavian countries, and the Eastern European states such as Hungary, did they have better lives? What truth lay behind a simple tick in the box? Did they not need the information that had transformed our self-understanding? What about trans people in the Middle East, or as far east as China and Japan? What could we learn from them, and what could they gain from us? Defining the problem is always the first and most significant step on the road to making big steps forward. One thing that made it easy for British, North American and Australasian campaigners to network has always been the lack of a language barrier. It means we're not just able to talk, we can immediately use each other's resources too. Young trans people in Britain can benefit from thousands of pages of information published on the internet by campaigners in the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, for instance. Yet what resources would a young French or Arabic-speaking trans be able to learn from? Innovations in this area are already well underway. Lynn Conway in the United States has a very impressive and groundbreaking project underway to translate all of the English language resources of her excellent information site into a vast array of other languages. In doing so, Lynn is making links with trans people who can act as local language translators in those countries, and who then become the links in a chain of learning more about the social and political position of trans people in those societies too. What we learn from that may well define the priorities for education and reform for decades to come. Yasmin Yabar's Trans Eastern site similarly crosses cultural barriers and, in doing so, helps to unlock new channels for trans people to learn about and help one another on a truly global basis. The tantalising thing about demolishing frontiers and exchanging knowledge is that you never know where it's going to lead. Just as there was a period in the 1990s when English-speaking trans people started learning about each other from around the world and then began growing from that expanded self-understanding, we probably have an exciting time ahead as we learn about each other and figure out how we can help those less fortunate than ourselves. Some countries, too small to have viable transport organisations of their own, may benefit from simply being able to use translated resources. Others may start campaigning for new social advances after learning more of what's possible. And who knows where all that leads us? For me, it seems light years away from being a small child reading someone else's condemnation of my existence in a 1960s newspaper, all alone and feeling very afraid. If we just prevent that from happening to other children around the world, then I think it's a thing worth striving for.